It's Friday. That means it's time to get caught up in the world, the always interesting, bustling, not going to quiet down anytime soon world of North Carolina politics. I'm Jeff Tiberi. This is the WUNC Politics Podcast. Here to help us review some of what happened in the always fascinating landscape of hashtag NCPOL is Aisha Dhu with the progressive organization Higher Heights. They work to get more black women elected to public office, as well as Clark Reamer. He is former chair of the North Carolina Young Republicans and is also chief of staff to State House Representative Jason Sain. Hey there.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Thanks, Jeff.
This conversation was recorded Thursday afternoon via Zoom. Outgoing Congressman Mark Walker plans to run for the U.S. Senate. Reminder, North Carolina will have an open seat in 2022. Republican Richard Burr is retiring. Walker is the first to officially enter what is likely to be a crowded field. He hails from Greensboro, has sought to forge partnerships with the black community, and is also allies with President Trump. Other possible GOP candidates include the president's daughter-in-law, Laura, former governor Pat McCrory, and Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, among other possibilities. Clark, as this field fills out, do you expect Walker to be the front runner?
Well, he's certainly out there first, and that's going to give him some advantage. He's certainly a campaigner that you want to keep an eye on. He came out of an initial primary, a somewhat crowded primary when he ran for Congress originally with appellate court judge-elect Phil Berger Jr. and several other candidates, and was the nominee, Republican nominee from that group. So he's someone to keep an eye on, and certainly being the first mover will give him some advantage.
Aisha, front runner, do you expect him? I mean, he's obviously the front runner in this moment because he's the only one that's officially in the race, but we're going to have, who knows, we could see a dozen candidates. We could see 20 candidates by the time this thing fills out. Who do you think is going to be the front runner?
I really can't call it. Many people made the mistake. I wasn't one of them of thinking that Donald Trump wasn't going to make it as far as he was from the very beginning. I always thought that people were going to wake up and realize that he was halfway through the process before they were clear that he was more than a television personality. So I think that means that Laura Trump has an opportunity that perhaps she wouldn't have had in the past. So I think it'll be a really crowded field, and it could go any kind of way, I think, with a crowded primary on both sides.
I would add, don't underestimate the name recognition that both Laura Trump and former Governor McCrory would bring to a primary. They both have huge statewide name ID, and that, you know, I think if either jump in, then you probably look to them as your initial front runner.
So just a bit of a context, a reminder, and also a quick follow-up here. Walker is not running, didn't run for Congress again because the congressional districts were redrawn. That triad constituency went from likely R to likely D. It'll be Kathy Manning next serving the 6th district. So that's Walker. But Walker's constituency has an HBCU in North Carolina A&T, and it seems as though he has tried to make inroads with the black community. But I'm wondering if you, either of you, both of you, view that as legitimate or more of window dressing. Aisha, let's start with you.
What I'll say is that I think I know that the HBC community appreciated his efforts, along with Congresswoman Adams, right, who is the biggest leader for HBCUs here, and worked in tandem with him to help out HBCUs. So I think that it's valued. I don't know that that's enough to turn out black voters, right? So it's definitely going to be incumbent upon all of the candidates to communicate with voters and not make it simply transactional. I'll say that he definitely has a long time, a longer runway than others by announcing so early that he is running for office. I don't think that means that he then is viewed as an all-around champion for issues that are important to black voters and black women, especially.
Clark, size up for me, if you would, the efforts that Congressman Walker has tried to make with minority communities, the black community, in the triad.
No, I think that's very, it's very legitimate and heartfelt from his position. And I think it's something he started very early in his congressional career. and came from a very real place of service and sense of community, especially with African-American evangelicals and having that shared background as something he thinks is both the right thing to do and has some as political upsides.
On Wednesday, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond, Virginia, threw out a lower court ruling that had invalidated voter ID. The decision is a notable victory for legislative Republicans, although it is far from the end of this issue in court. There is not immediately a requirement here. Lawsuits over a photo ID mandate at the polls are moving through state court. Aisha, is there any implementation of voter ID that you would be okay with?
No. The challenge is that, unfortunately, it ends up being close to a poll tax in the sense that there are people who can't afford to make it back to New Jersey to get the documentation that they need. All of the different states, different counties, cities handle information as far as your birth certificate, your basic information very differently. And so I think especially for a lot of senior folks, it becomes really challenging. It becomes challenging even to get to the DMV. And when you look at even what it looks like to just renew your license during COVID, it's highly problematic. I had a friend of mine who made an appointment, still stood in line after making an appointment to be told that she had to make another appointment to come back to actually get her ID done. So this is really, it's challenging already during an age of COVID. And so to add that extra barrier for people, I think it's just, it's highly challenging and problematic. And the issues that we've had with elections has not been voter fraud. It's been election fraud that took place in the 9th Congressional District that had nothing to do with IDs.
Clark, I know that there is an implementation you would be okay with. Let me frame up the question this way to you. What is your outlook on voter ID being implemented in North Carolina? As I said, this is kind of the federal track, but there is still plenty of state litigation that needs to play out. And just on paper, it is not as favorable of a bench for Republicans here in North Carolina.
I think that voter ID will be implemented by the 2022 election. I think we had some very strong words by the federal court in this opinion, especially when they compared it to others, the requirements that North Carolina, the General Assembly enacted when they passed the implementation legislation were, you know, had more more given them than other states that the federal courts have found to be constitutional and far more than some. So, you know, the court rightly went back and said, hey, we found other states with really stronger voter ID requirements to be constitutional. There's no way we can't find this one to be constitutional as well. Ultimately, I think our state courts are going to find some version of voter IDs. I won't say there won't be some tweaks around the edges that will pass their muster. We're still going to have a Democratic majority on the Supreme Court, no matter what happens in the newbie race. But we now have a strong Republican majority in the appellate courts. So it'll be interesting to see the play between those two, and especially who ends up on those appellate panels as they go forward.
Let's use that as a segue to our final topic. The closest statewide race in North Carolina history will now move to a hand-eye recount, the contest for Chief Justice of the State Supreme Court. Republican Paul Newby leads Democratic incumbent Sherry Beasley by about 400 votes, this out of 5.5 million cast. A hand-eye recount will include 3% of precincts from across the state and take at least a couple of weeks. It's unclear how these 3% of precincts will be chosen for the hand-eye recount. That's notable. What are you watching most closely?
I think, you know, we're just making sure that all of the votes are counted, right? That we have the clearest picture that we possibly can. It's so close. There's still a possibility for it to go either way. And this is the I guess, the greatest extent of the democratic process.
I'm certainly looking at what precincts will be selected. I think that's going to be a very interesting What process they use is going to be very interesting. As you know, our Board of Elections at both the county and state level, or at each county level and at the state level, are partisan bodies that are appointed by the governor. So they theoretically have some incentive to perhaps choose precincts that they think might be more favorable to Justice Beasley. I think that in the end of the day, you're not going to see much change from what we've seen. The entire statewide recount, I believe the vote total change was 4 votes from the initial certification. It's going to be a long, expensive process for not much result would be my prediction, but we will see, and it's certainly her right to ask for this recount.
Is your expectation that we will see more of a change in the tally with a hand-eye recount than we did with this previous recount?
I would expect about the same, a dozen or less.
I think it was Michigan, right, with their recount. There were 79 more votes for VP Biden, President-elect Biden. So I think that it can go either way, and we will see how this plays out.
Ayesha Dew is the political director at Higher Heights. Clark Reamer is chief of staff for a Republican state House representative. Enjoy your weekends.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, it's good of you to download and tap play and engage in local politics. That's where so much of it really actually happens. Attention on Capitol Hill, but a lot of the oomph, the meaning, the impactful stuff plays out in your state legislature. So glad to have you along for our Friday review of some of what happened in North Carolina political news. Don't forget that you can get some other political context. That's on Tuesdays when we drop the other portion of the WUNC Politics podcast this past week, a conversation with Congresswoman-elect Kathy Manning. Week prior to that, a conversation with retiring journalist Jim Morrill. As always, you can subscribe to the program, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify. Throughout the week, stay up to date with what's happening at our website, WUNC.org. You can also check out our other podcasts, Tested and Embodied, the great offerings, among others, that WUNC has for you. For Clark and Ayesha, my name is Jeff Tiberi. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you next week. A, B,
C, D, E, G, H, I, J, K, L, N, O, P, Q, R, T, B, W, X, Y, and E, said my number, A, B, C, that won't you sing me.